And you get me today. It's Natalie, not Clayton. I'm sorry you don't get us both. Welcome to Redacted. Normally, this is a show with Clayton Morris and Natalie Morris. We are a married couple, which means we share flus. That's what we did. That's what we've been doing this week. So I've been out sick for a few days. Now it's Clayton's turn. So, you know, when one person goes down, the other person has to pick it up so that the other person doesn't complain that they didn't get a real sick day. If you're married, you know what I'm talking about. So it's my turn. I gotta step up. Welcome to Redacted. This is the show where we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, and especially the narratives that they largely ignore. And there's a lot there. So thank you for joining us. Today, I'm very excited. We have first-time guest Nicole Shanahan on the show. I spoke with her earlier, and I'm really excited for you to see it because we talked about chemtrails. Because we're not crazy. The media acts like we're crazy for asking questions about chemtrails, but there's a lot of there. And we ask her about that. We ask her about what HHS is doing, given that she's a close personal friend of Secretary Kennedy now. What's the deal with fluoride? When's that going away? I also ask her why Secretary Kennedy seems so focused on anti-Semitism instead of, oh, I don't know, poisons in the food. She has a good answer for that. I'm super excited for you to see it. So stick around to the end of the show to see that. And I also want to say a personal note of privilege that I was very happy to talk to her. She's one of, I think, the most honest politicians or political influencers or what we'll, whatever we'll call her on the scene today. So this was exciting for me. I hope it's exciting for you, too. But first, we need to start with Israel, because Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu says that he controls the U.S. agenda. That's clear, but at least he said it out. That's saying the quiet part out loud. Now they want to jail anyone who speaks out against Israel under the guise of anti-Semitism. They mentioned specifically Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, so we're going to take a look at that. We're also going to take a look at, what the heck, Europe? Jailing political opponents, that kind of thing. So yes, we're going to look at that. Also, a toddler was kicked out of nursery school in the UK for being transphobic. A three-year-old. How does that happen? We're going to look at data that shows that kids... Go ahead, please.
I think like a three-year-old, what are they really afraid of? They're afraid of the dark? And
right.
What? Like maybe dogs?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of... phobia does a three-year-old have? They don't have the like mental capacity for phobias yet.
Yes. And given the language now around toddlers, like let them do whatever they want, let them hit, let them not share, right? It's all of that's sort of progressive education. But don't say a boy pretending to be a girl is a boy. You're transphobic, you're out, right? So we don't even punish toddlers for hitting anymore, but this what the heck are you getting with public education in the UK? Also, we're going to speak to Mike Krupa today. He's going to tell us how Poland is resisting being dragged into the Ukrainian war hand over fist. They're going kicking and screaming against this agenda. Will they be punished by the EU? So we have a lot of news to get to, a lot indeed. Tell us where you're joining us from. Please don't leave because you don't have Clayton. Clayton is sick off camera, handing me sparkling water, but will not join the show. He exists. That was like a Toy Story. Like, say hello, Buzz. He's fine. Do you know what that is? When he's at the bad kids. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That was like that. That was, in fact, Clayton's hand. Okay, before we get to all of this news, though, I want to tell you about our friends over at Shopify, because Shopify is a platform for e-commerce that we actually use. We are Shopify customers. The Redacted store runs on this platform. So if you have an idea to sell something to the world, no matter what it is, you can go to Shopify.com and get started all the way from that I just have an idea stage to this is my store, I'd launch it to the world. That's the Redacted store. We add things to it all the time when we get inspired, and it's super easy. Well, it's as easy as our designer Grim coming up with a great idea. He drafts this up and we're able to put it on a shirt, a mug, what have you. And Shopify handles all of that. The front end and the back end, they can handle taking payments. They can handle customer support. They can handle it all. So check them out with whatever idea you've got. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout that we use here on Redacted. You can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redacted. That's all lowercase. Once again, that's shopify.com/redacted. And make your money today. Okay, I'm sorry. I need just a second. Okay. I will be fine. I'm all right. Okay, we're going to do this. It's just that lingering gross part, but I've got the smelly cat voice. So here we go. Well, Trump got some Browning points from Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu on Monday. Netanyahu says Trump is doing exactly what he wants, and this is a template that other governments should use to do what Netanyahu wants. Trump is basically being a good dog, and other nations should do this too. What he's talking about is the war on anti-Semitism. What he is admitting is that Israel now has the power to define anti-Semitism and get people punished for what is not really anti-Semitism. It's criticizing the government of Israel. Now, when in the comments I see, oh, you're being anti-Semitic because we criticize handily the government of Israel has nothing to do with Jewish people or Jewish practitioners. We're talking about criticizing Israel. Netanyahu very much would like you to get those two things confused and get arrested and get kicked out of a country if you're an immigrant and get punished and get deplatformed if you criticize Israel, because they would like the definition of anti-Semitism to engulf that. So you can't criticize the government. When you can't criticize the government, guess where you're headed? Not to a good place. Watch this clip. And then after, watch Trump's accountant and Israeli ambassador David Friedman take this even a step further when he says the government should jail student protesters and critics of the government of Israel, like Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, they should put them to jail because we can't win them over ideologically. Watch.
These ignorant demonstrators. Who are they demonstrating for? For these murderers, these rapists, these mass killers? This is a reflection of a deep rot that has pervaded the intellectual hub of free societies. And this vilification of Israel, the Jewish people, and Western values has been propagated by a systemic alliance between the ultra-progressive left and radical Islam. It must be resolutely fought by civilized societies to safeguard their future. This is why we must all commend President Trump's decisive actions against anti-Semitism. And we must pressure other governments to do the same.
A government can do
a second. He's saying we pressured the United States and got our way, so we got to pressure other governments too. That's unacceptable, right? How do you feel about that, knowing that the pressure of a foreign government has now put laws down on your own life? Now watch, again, this second part where this gentleman will say that we just got to jail these people. We can't win ideologically, so straight to jail.
And so when we talk about the importance of a bipartisan fight against anti-Semitism, which of course I endorse, and as my predecessor said, I condemn anti-Semitism on the right and on the left. I'm an equal opportunity condemner of anti-Semitism.
You're alluding to Candace Owens and Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, none of them are any good on the right, on the left. I don't like any of these anti-Semites, and I'm not shy about it. But the government, a government, the United States government or the government of France or the government of any other country, has the power to rein in anti-Semitism in a much more effective way. And you know, people say, well, you know, the governments are not in the business of changing the way people think. That's true, but, you know, to my thinking, most people who are, you know, anti-Semites, most of these people running around, we're not gonna win their hearts and minds because they don't have hearts and they don't have minds. So, you know, how are we gonna, there's no reason to think we're ever gonna convince them, but we can deport them, we can put them in jail, we can make their lives miserable, we can cut off their funding, and that's what the Trump administration is doing for the first time.
Wow, so they're applauding that. Yeah. That's, you know, crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, he just said the government doesn't do anything to influence people, but it's like they're making you think that anti-Semitism and being against what Israel is doing is the same thing. That's so frustrating.
Right. It's, we would be it's on incredibly that list. Frustrating. Right, because it's nonsense. We all know that you should be able to criticize a government without it extrapolating it to their people. We criticize America all the time. We're not self-hating Americans.
Well, just to chime in, it's also legal to be anti-Semitic.
Yes.
I mean, that's right. That is still free speech. I don't condone it, but what are they going to, like, anybody they deem racist now goes straight to jail? Is that where we're at?
Yes.
Or is it, you know, it's, yeah.
That's not what they're saying. That's literally what he just said. Yeah.
Right, right. But he's not saying any racism. He's saying just specifically anti-Semitism.
Right, but how long until this is extrapolated to any group that you want as a control mechanism? If you read 1984, right. It's put rats on your head if you don't agree. I will make you think this, right? Because I can't win the logic argument, so I will punish you. I will put you in jail until you parrot the government line. The Trump administration is taking this even further. Now they are reviewing nearly $9 billion in federal grants at Harvard while it investigates how the university handled anti-Semitism. Now, the administration said that they have proven that they will, quote, take swift action to hold institutions accountable if they allow anti-Semitism to fester, and they will not hesitate to ask if Harvard fails to do so. They will not hesitate to act. Now, what is it that Harvard is guilty of? There are no reports of actual violence, but there were confrontations between pro-Palestinian and pro-Israel students, and they confronted each other and they doxed each other. So why is only one group being protected here and not the other? The other group was harmed too. Columbia was targeted by the Trump administration just days ago, and they capitulated to the government demands to review policies towards Jewish students, including allowing them to review the curriculum. What's happening here? Why are our rights being eroded for one group only? In a congressional hearing on Monday, Rabbi Levi Shem Tov told the Senate that it's not enough to be anti-Semitic. Watch.
Anti-Semitism is not just an age-old prejudice. It is a contemporary crisis manifesting on campuses across the nation. It is not enough for individuals or institutions to merely claim they are not anti-Semitic. As my father once taught me, it is not enough for people, especially public figures, to be neutral or not be anti-Semitic. One must be anti-anti-Semitic. We must demand the same of our universities and government institutions. This hearing, in my opinion, is an attempt to be just that, anti-anti-Semitic.
All right, where have you heard this before? Anti-anti-Semitic, where does this ring a bell? Over the last few years, it should, because this is a playbook out of the Obama and the Biden administrations. We heard nonstop from the Democrats, only it was about blacks mostly. And this was the birth of neo-racism, which is ranking people by race and color to bestow privileges on some and not others. So it's worthwhile to ask, why are only some groups worthy of extra protections and others are told to just stop being babies, they're not victims, move on? So if you sort of came around on this rhetoric by Republicans that neo-racism is racism and critical race theory is racism, wouldn't you feel kind of betrayed watching them do it to Jews and say, no, but Jews are actually the victims here, and so they get special protections? It rings hollow when you say, oh, no, it's not a thing, but it's a thing for them and them only. How do you reconcile that? And again, I go back to the way we covered the BLM riots and this and the neo-racism is that the law needs to be enforced equally. If Jewish students get hurt, their perpetrators should be punished. If there are, you know, vandalized classrooms disrupted, prosecute that equally. There's no need to say we're going to prosecute only on certain racial groups and not others. Just a reminder that this hearing is still there to promote the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which did pass the House in 2023 and is still with the Senate. And it broadens the definition of anti-Semitism to include criticisms of Israel. It also would include, and this comes from the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, saying this separate group defines anti-Semitism from now on. So that group can broaden the definition and we will prosecute you accordingly. It also says that you couldn't publicize any, quote, claims of Jews killing Jesus. So the Bible, therefore, becomes anti-Semitic. Does the Trump administration and Congress really want to forbid people from criticizing Israel as law? Are they going to go further and put people in jail, as was suggested? Is this literally Netanyahu pulling the puppet strings of Trump? How can you see it any other way? Why? So let me know what you think of that before we move on.
And unfortunately, you look at all of the people in the Senate and Congress that are on the dole for Israel, even the Speaker of the House. So it's like if that legislation is proposed, it'll probably pass.
Yeah. And I just think, I wonder, you know, people like me who maybe were proponents of critical race theory and then studied it and realized, oh, this is not helping anybody, actually. This is probably hurting Black people more than anything else. We're making them professional victims. We're denying their own progress that they made on their own before the Civil Rights Act. We should not be in, the government should not be in the business of this. I want nothing to do with it. And then I feel really betrayed to have the party that broke this down build it back up for a different group. And I wonder, if I were Black and had come around to that same conclusion, wouldn't I feel betrayed? What do you think of that, David? You don't have to.
I mean, I think it's
specifically, but
I don't agree with any of it.
I don't understand it. I just don't understand it, how you can break it down to build it back up. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to Europe. Europe is going all in on punishing politicians that they don't like, specifically the more right-leaning ones. In France, opposition leader Marine Le Pen was banned for standing office for 5 years and sentenced to jail after being convicted of embezzling funds. Now, we're going to look at exactly what she was convicted for in a second, but this would block her from taking the presidency, and she was on track to do it because, well, for many reasons, France is a mess. Emmanuel Macron has made it that way on purpose. There's no reason to trust progressive leaders in Europe. Emmanuel Macron is the number one dude. He wants war so badly he can taste it. He also has sex scandals and scandals inside of his office. There was a weird scandal about one of his main presidential advisors dressing up as a policeman to go beat up protesters. Like, the main first White House advisor was basically that job, the equivalent of France. So, yeah, anyone who likes him, I don't know. You have your head so far up your butthole. I don't know what to say to you. So that's why Marine Le Pen was so popular. That's why they had to come after her. Now she joins the ranks of, Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil, Imran Khan in Pakistan, Matteo Salvini in Italy, Calin Georgescu in Romania recently, and I would add to that Donald Trump in the United States. Modern opposition leaders jailed or nearly jailed in Trump's case as they were poised to take office and disrupt leftist agendas. Now, Le Pen stormed out of the courtroom before the verdict was read, and she muttered the word unbelievable in French. On X, she vowed to continue fighting injustice until the end. Now, I think it would just be foolish. It would be foolish to see this as an impartial trial. Clearly, they wanted her out of the race. She was tried for financial records between the years 2004, so more than 20 years ago now, to 2016. But 9 years later, she gets a verdict right when they need her out of the race. She was accused of using EU funds for parliamentary assistance. So she was an MP in European Parliament, but she also was, working in a capacity for the French government. They're saying you commingled the funds. And she said, well, a lot of my assistants commingled their jobs. And she didn't take anything for herself. And that is a valid argument, but they didn't buy it. She took nothing for herself. And the punishment is much harsher than others of this kind. So clearly they just needed her out of the race. Every subsequent election, she has gained popularity, and they just can't have that. Now, in Europe, they also want to punish Viktor Orban from Hungary, if only they can just figure out how. The incoming German chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has drafted laws to demand that the EU, quote, withhold funds and suspend voting rights from countries that violate key principles, such as the rule of law. Well, that's very broad, right? So can we punish a country that's violating our key principles? Well, you can define that however you want. They didn't specifically call out Orban, but Politico.eu says it's clear that Hungary opposes their agenda, such as wanting war, such as wanting mass migration, such as talking about, scientific reality. And so they need to find a way to get him to stop that because he is too popular and he is too free to continue to do that. And they just can't have this dissenter.
So we need to find a way to circumvent a nation's laws because they don't respect the rule of law. Am I understanding that correctly?
Exactly right. Exactly right. I saw a meme recently about the European Union, and I am still a European resident. I still have residency in Europe. And so I feel very strongly that the people of Europe are so far down the ladder in terms of making any decisions for their lives. And somebody put it this way recently: when you need a government for your government, you know something's wrong. So you can elect Viktor Orban, but he will get punished if he doesn't actually carry out the mandate that the voters want from him because of this dystopic system. So amid all of this, the EU still has the balls to publish this utter propaganda. They say, hey, good news. 66% of citizens want the EU to play a greater role in protecting them against global crisis and security risks. Basically, they love us. They really do. Our own people love us, and they want us to protect them more. From what? Well, the enemies that they make, basically. We make the enemies. You need us to protect them. This comes from the same survey we discussed last week, where they sampled 0.0058% of the European population and did not disclose their research methods. But trust them. People love them, and they feel very safe being a part of the EU. You know, that's one of the reasons I no longer want to live in the EU. So they didn't ask me. But if you want to believe this propaganda, you go right ahead. Okay. How, I ask you, can a three-year-old get kicked out of school for being transphobic? Nursery school. According to The Telegraph, which looked at internal government records, a three-year-old was suspended from school for being transphobic. What they called it, the suspension, was abuse against sexual orientation and gender identity. So what does that mean? Well, we don't actually get a case file, so we can surmise that a young child saw that his or her classmate was either a boy or a girl, but pretending to be otherwise, and pointed that out and refused to call that person whatever they wanted to be called. A three-year-old, a four-year-old, transphobic. And as Philip pointed out, yeah, the word phobic means they were afraid to call that person. I don't think a three-year-old would be afraid. They would just say, that's what I see.
Well, it's even like a...
Sorry.
Phobia even implies there's like a deep-seated like fear, yeah, or distrust of something. And in 3 years, you don't have the mental capacity to have actual phobias. You can be afraid of something. Something can scare you. But a phobia?
Right.
You know, like...
I don't know how that would... Yeah, exactly. So can you imagine getting a call and saying, I'm sorry, but your child's transphobic. They can no longer come to school. Public school? Yeah, they can't. You pay your taxes. We run this school, but we can't educate your child because they refuse to go along with this gender ideology. So we think they're phobic. And if you've ever had a three-year-old, you know that they just point things out like, why is that person's skin color that color? Why is that person heavier? Why is that person so skinny? Why do they have a wheelchair? They just ask questions. Sure. They just observe the world the way they see it, and they don't know the norms. And when you're trying to impose this, in this society, when someone tells you something, they are, right? That's cruelty towards that child. And the government has clearly chosen the trans child is more important than the non-trans child. This child will get suspended, right? Go ahead, David.
I was in a grocery store line with my son, my youngest son, Caleb, and there was an Amish guy in front of us, and my son's like, he smells like pee. And then the Amish guy turned around and looked at me, and I was just like, and I wasn't going to correct him. I was like, it's true, you know? And, but then later I told my son, like, I was like, you can't say, you know, you can tell me quiet, yeah, but they do, they just speak their mind. And we basically teach that out of them. We teach that honesty out of them through school. And, yeah. You know?
Right. I have a story like that when I was teaching Miles to potty train, and he just peed his pants right in the middle of the Starbucks. And so I went and I told, and it was like a big puddle. So I went and I told the employee, I was like, I'm so sorry, we spilled. Because I just didn't want to tell him exactly what it was. I was too embarrassed. And the guy came out with a mop, and he was, you know, cleaning it. And I was 9 months pregnant with my second child. I was in a state. And my son, Miles, he goes, he was two at the time. He goes, that guy cleaned the pee-pee. So the Starbucks employee knew that I had lied to him and said we spilled when it was actually pee. So I'm a bad mom for that. But
it was,
yeah,
funny. I saw Miles get embarrassed when you told that story. He's like, don't tell that story.
That guy cleaned the pee-pee. I was so, oh my gosh. All right.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Where was I? Okay, the statistics show that this has happened more than once. According to the Telegraph, 94 pupils at state primary schools were suspended or permanently excluded for transphobia or homophobia in 2022 to 2023 in a single school year. So you're telling children they do not have protected beliefs. They do not have the right to feel any which way. They must feel this way, or they don't even have the right to public education. Again, so this is the government choosing winners and losers, but even crazier, because we all know Keir Starmer's crazy. He now says that he watched Adolescence, the Netflix show, with his teenage son and daughter, and he wants Netflix to show this in schools across the country so as many young people can see it. He's talking about this Netflix show, Adolescence. It's about a young boy who's arrested and charged with brutally murdering a female classmate. First of all, is this appropriate to be showing in public schools? It's fiction. Also, literacy is down across the United Kingdom. Maybe we shouldn't be spending class time watching Netflix. You could assign it to age-appropriate classes if you really feel the need to. But he's actually saying, so I'm just wondering, is he any kickback for Netflix? He's saying they're going to allow us to show it, so maybe not. But this seems crazy. If you send your kid to public school in the UK, let me know what you think of this, because that's crazy. Right? There's just no better word for it. I have to come up with a better word for crazy. All right. We have more news to get to. We're going to talk about Poland pushing back against being dragged into the war with the UK. We also have special guest Nicole Shanahan on, and I'm really excited for you to see that, because she tells us her insider knowledge about what RFK Jr. is up as Secretary of Health and Human Services. She's not speaking on behalf of them, but obviously she has a closer vantage point than the rest of us. And so I ask her about fluoride in the water, chemtrails, why HHS is focused on anti-Semitism as a public health concern, those kind of things. And she's lovely, and I can't wait for you to see that. But before we get to all of that, I want you to know that Redacted is brought to you by Ground News. This is a service we use all the time, because Ground News is a great way to tell you what is the political bent of any given story and any given topic. So if you are looking at a story like chemtrails, for instance, and you think, well, what is the deal with chemtrails? I mean, you know, is this a conspiracy theory or not? It will give you a list of how that's covered, and then rate each coverage, whether or not it's right wing, left wing, partisan, nonpartisan, and it will give it a grade. You know, I was telling my kids the other day that a lot of times it's hard, because if you're reading the news, you don't know how to sniff out what's missing, where they're lying by omission. That's my career. It's taken me a whole lifetime to learn that. And so we need help being able to tell where there is bias, where there is omission. That's why there are great tools like Ground News. So, for instance, Mexico extradites 29 cartel suspects. These kinds of stories, you know, is it highly factual? Does it lean one way or another? So check out ground.news/redacted. And if you go there or scan the QR code on your screen, you'll get 40% off the same plan that we use every day. Again, that's ground.news/redacted. Check them out and you'll get 40% off. And again, it's a great way for you to sniff out the propaganda, because it's there, you guys. Well, I mean, we do our... Yeah, go ahead.
I want to mention too, I use it, and they have a browser extension that you can put in Chrome. And so when you go to websites, it actually shows you along the top all of the information, whether it's right leaning, how many articles and stuff. And it's like right there. And I really like that, because I don't have to go somewhere else. I can just browse the web like normal and see that stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. I don't use Chrome, but is there a Safari extension like that?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, amazing. Yeah. Because, you know, we have to train our mind to be able to see through propaganda, and it's really hard. And so any tool that, and you know, I think that they do a great job of tagging the lean on any given story. So check them out. All right, well, stop me if you've heard this one before. A group of people want to stop supporting funding and weaponization of Ukraine. They want to stop funding the deaths of a million people, and the media calling them right-wing extremists, ultra-nationalists. That's what's happening in Poland. The Polish people seem to be done with Ukraine. They're fed up, and they've been inundated with millions of Ukrainian refugees, Polish soldiers fighting and dying on the front lines against Russia. But anyone who's against this is far right. How did that happen? Well, I guess our next guest is then we'll call him an ultra-nationalist or an extremist, because he wants peace. He wants to not die in a war with Ukraine. Dr. Mike Krupa joins us from Poland right now. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Hello, everyone. Good to see you guys again. Hello, Natalie.
Hello. Okay, so we talked just a few minutes ago about how the EU wants to punish any country that does not go along with their agenda. But there does seem to be a movement in Poland to not be dragged into this war. Poland is used as a, you know, I'm going to speak for you, you don't speak for yourself. And so the EU keeps saying, well, Putin's coming into Poland next. The Polish people are super scared. They definitely want to push back against this. But what's the reality?
Well, the reality is that a lot of people in Poland are waking up to the reality, i.e. that this war is lost, that we have a problem in Poland with the as a result of the huge influx of Ukrainian refugees, or in many cases, so-called refugees that enter Poland after the beginning of the special military operation in Ukraine. And so we're seeing public opinion has definitely been turning against the dominant still, unfortunately, media and political narrative that first Ukrainians or Poland are saving the Polish economy. And without this influx, this wave of millions of Ukrainian first immigrants before the war and then so-called refugees after the war, that our economy would basically crash without this Ukrainian lifeline, which is obviously BS from an economic and many other points of view also. And the second point, that Russia is just gearing up to invade Poland and that we as Poland should prepare for a war with Russia. And the best way to do that would be to fight on the territory of Ukraine. So those are the two sets of propaganda that have been successfully sold, unfortunately, for the last 3 years. But fortunately, Polish public opinion, despite the fact that in the beginning of the war, was very much in line with what the, I would say, the regime wanted the population to accept as truth. Right now, we're seeing the trends are definitely turning against the regime's narrative. And you could see it in the desperation that seems to pervade the upper echelons of the Polish political class in Warsaw. We saw this funny ex-appeal from Prime Minister Donald Tusk, I believe yesterday, where he was basically begging Trump to reconsider the tariffs and saying that in Europe, you only have friends and Poland, we are your greatest ally. So please, please, Mr. President, be nice. And oh, by the way, if you can fight the war in Ukraine for us, that would also be great. So in light of that desperation, you're seeing the public opinion is changing. And hopefully, as many are predicting, this will be reflected in the upcoming presidential elections that are to take place in Poland in May.
Now, one of the more laughable things in the last few weeks has been the chest pounding of European leaders like, well, if we don't have the United States to lead this anymore, we can do it. We're going to arm ourselves. We're going to take on a bunch of debt, build a bunch of bombs. We definitely can do it. But then you look at the signal leak of the Houthi chat and you have American intelligence saying we have to help Europe. They can't even fight the Houthis. They can't even do that. And so does any European actually think that they have the means to win a war against Russia?
Well, I've noticed that President Macron has been trying to do a sort of Napoleon redux. He seems to think he's a sort of reincarnation of Napoleon Bonaparte for the 21st century. So he might believe some of the BS that's spouting out of Brussels and Berlin and other European capitals. But I think the majority of the population of the nation states in Europe that comprise the European Union and the ones that are in Europe but are not part of the European Union are not interested in any war with Russia. And they understand the deficiencies in the European economies and in the European defense sectors that really can't stand, you know, toe-to-toe with the Russian bear. I mean, we had news over the weekend that basically the blast furnaces, the last two blast furnaces that were producing steel in Britain have been shut down. So what kind of war preparation are we talking about here? You constantly hear, I mean,
what they were saying to the French is, if you look at the leaked document out of the French government, is we will prepare you for armed resistance, armed militia resistance in each little tiny village. So do you think the Poles are down with that?
Well, it all depends. I think if we understand resistance to Russia in Ukraine, this would translate to what I would call terrorist tactics, because the Ukrainians are known for resisting Russians. Back then, it was the Soviets from 1945 to the early 1950s, by using basically terrorist tactics against, obviously, an occupier. But the tactics that they were using were very similar to what happened in Volhynia in the years 1943, 1945, when the Ukrainian nationalists slaughtered hundreds of thousands of Poles and, you know, Czechs, Jews, and other national minorities. But basically, when we talk about the resistance that's to come from European nation states and the guarantees that are coming from the French that, you know, we're going to support this entire European revival, no, it's just pure narrative. Because, you know, I think it was Colonel McGregor today on an earlier show said that in order to build up a competent army, if you're starting to build things today and you're laying the foundations today, it takes about 10 years to actually build a force that can do the real fighting. So all we're hearing right now is basically narratives being sold on social media, which a lot of people are unfortunately buying, because you still see a lot of the Ukrainian flags on, you know, on X and other social media. So there is a contingent of people that still buy the BS, but by the day, that contingent is falling. Like, I've noticed, for example, that nobody in Poland anymore, at least not in the Polish mainstream media, wears a Ukrainian flag in their jacket, right? So you have to ask yourself, mm-hmm. Well, what changed? What changed? Well, everybody knows what changed, except they're just, you know, they're too dishonest to admit it.
Right. But what of the Polish people who were told, you are making sacrifices for the war in Ukraine? Your crops will not be sold. Ukrainian crops will be prioritized. We will not export your goods any longer. You will take these refugees, and your taxes and the euro, your taxes will rise and the euro will plummet. And all of that was based on a lie, and it was putting the Polish people last. And is there any repercussion for what they've done?
Well, the repercussions, unfortunately, are only seen in the frustration of the Polish populace. Now, a lot of people are hoping that the upcoming presidential elections will be a sort of a middle finger of the Polish nation to the establishment. We'll see how that goes, because basically right now, the favorite, unfortunately, is one Rafał Trzaskowski, who is the current mayor of Warsaw. He's basically a protege of Barack Obama, George Soros, and that entire crew of people. But there are certain sort of, I would call them, dissident anti-establishment candidates, including Grzegorz Braun, whom Clayton had the opportunity to interview, I think, over a year ago, and one Sławomir Mentzen, who is also in the running from the Confederation Party. Now, despite the fact that they have their differences, they are united in their opposition to any Polish participation in the proxy war against Russia, which is a big plus. And the second, they're actually seeing that there is a concerted effort to transform Poland, if not into a multicultural state, but at least into a bicultural state, where we have Poles and Ukrainians living side by side, and where the entity, the national, you know, the pillars of the national state are becoming more and more Ukrainianized, in the sense that, you know, you're seeing more and more billboards in Ukrainian, you're hearing Ukrainian on the street. And, you know, some are speculating that it's just a matter of time before we see Ukrainian political parties in Poland. We already have Ukrainian trade unions, for example. So that term that was used by Grzegorz Braun a couple of years ago, Ukrainization of Poland, is becoming a fact, and people are waking up to that. And we are asking serious questions about reforming our immigration system and, for example, implementing something along the lines of a immigration moratorium. So these two candidates, Mentzen and Grzegorz Braun, are actually discussing this. Mentzen is having fairly good poll numbers as of today. We'll see how that turns out. Grzegorz Braun is around the 3-4% margin. But one way or another, the message that there's something seriously wrong with internal Polish politics, that's an extension of what we do externally, i.e. in Ukraine, is resonating with more and more Poles. So there's a lot of hope in Poland at this stage that something will happen in the first round of elections in May.
Can you explain that to me? I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with having a workers' union that represents immigrants from Ukraine, but is it exporting Ukrainian politics, which are corrupt, into Poland?
Oh, yeah. Well, the problem with, you know, the whole massive immigration issue in Poland, because we like to talk about, it's just like in the States, right? I mean, it's easy to bash the illegal immigrants and the dynamics of illegal immigration. Everybody sees that. You know it's wrong to cross the border and to basically invade a country. But when you have massive legal immigration of the likes that we've had in Poland in the last 3, 4, 5 years, especially when it comes to Ukrainians, of which there are about just north of three, some even speculate around 4 million. Add to that a couple of 100,000 Georgians, Belarusians, mm-hmm. and people coming in from other continents to Poland. You're not only seeing, wage depression in the labor market, that's a whole different issue, but you're also seeing issues where we have seen significant rise in crime committed by foreigners in Poland. This is being talked about more and more by the police in Poland, who are being frustrated that they're not able to have the capacity in the capital within their ranks to actually battle this plague, which is becoming more and more apparent every day. I mean, the latest news about so-called Russian spies in Poland that were conducting some sort of sabotage and diversion operations, you know, they were accused of being Russian spies, but each of these so-called spies had Ukrainian passports. So you're opening the gates to national security threats also. Plus the fact that a lot of these Ukrainians that come to Poland, as you mentioned, they bring along with them their Banderite nationalist ideology, and nobody dares to point that out, unfortunately. And a lot of them are acting as if, you know, they own this country. And a lot of Poles are being fed up with that because they're coming here. Not only are they living off the social grants that many of them are getting from the government, but a lot of them are acting as if, you know, they deserve some sort of special treatment. And when you walk down a Warsaw street, for example, and you're seeing a Lamborghini or a brand new Mercedes or a Tesla riding on a Ukrainian license plate, you have to ask yourself the question, what kind of refugees and immigrants are actually coming to Poland?
Oh, yes. I saw that in Lisbon, Teslas and all kinds of things like that with Ukrainian plates. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, good point. Thank you for making that distinction. But all of this can only happen if Poland is sovereign. Now, the new German chancellor has said that he is interested in creating laws to punish Viktor Orban from trying to protect his country from the exact things you just dictated. So a new leadership in Poland would still be beholden to whatever the EU wants. So could they even implement an agenda like this to put the Polish people first while still a part of the EU?
Well, let's just say hypothetically that an anti-establishment candidate becomes president after the second round of Polish elections in May. Unfortunately, the Institute of the Presidency in Poland is mostly a symbolic institution, because the president is the commander-in-chief of the army. He can initiate legislation, but that could obviously be struck down with the proper amount majority in parliament. And he's mostly a symbolic figure as the head of state. However, because of the power and the symbolism of his office, he can generate sort of political dynamics that can influence, for example, the creation of a new political party, or he can influence some things that are happening in parliament, right? Especially if he has a strong mandate from the people. But if we were to see change on a scale that we're discussing here, which would definitely be associated with regaining the sovereignty that we lost ever since 2004, actually, when, as some people say, not Poland entered the European Union, but rather the European Union entered Poland, then we would definitely have to look towards something of either a new treaty with the European Union, which is highly unlikely, a sovereigntist treaty, or a Pole exit, basically. Or if you have the guts, as Viktor Orban and Robert Fico does, you fight for what you can within the confines of the European Union, and you use your veto power that you have at the highest levels of decision-making in Brussels. Unfortunately, nobody in Poland dares to take that kind of action, because the current ruling regime believes that if you say no to the European Union, you're automatically saying yes to Putin. Therefore, that makes you a Russian agent. Therefore, that makes you the scum of the earth. And we will obviously not engage in that. So that's the dichotomy that we have. But I agree with you that if we were to undertake major pro-Polish, Poland first type changes in Poland, it would probably require first and foremost a saying au revoir to Brussels.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, then you don't have anyone who wants to take on the labels of extremists or far right or whatever. Viktor Orban doesn't seem to care, doesn't seem to bother him what the media calls him. But I guess there's no politician in Poland who wants that right now. And who
unfortunately
would,
no politician right? in Poland that's in power right now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to blame anyone for not wanting to take that. But OK, we'll leave it there. Dr. Mike Krupa joining me from Warsaw, Poland, where it's late there. Thank you for staying up late to be on Redacted. It's always a pleasure to get your opinion and your perspective on this.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one. See you soon.
All right. See you soon. Well, let us know what you think of that. I mean, The fact that all 27 nations inside the European Union have this faction that knows that the EU is bad for them, drags them into war, tanks their economy, perverts their natural resources. And they just sort of stick there and see these propaganda surveys like people love us. It's wild. It's wild right now to see this happening. So let me know what you think. All right. Coming up, we're going to talk to Nicole Shanahan. I was able to speak to her earlier, and I'm super excited for you to see it because she is a political influencer that I very much respect. And we talk about chemtrails. Are they real? What happens when you admit that? What do we absolutely know? What does the government know? And what can the government actually do about it? And what can we do about it? I also talked to her about poison in our foods, poison in the water, fluoride specifically, and what Secretary Kennedy is up to over at Health and Human Services. So stick around for that. That's coming up. But before we get there, I want to tell you about our friends over at Bunker, because they have been a great sponsor for Redacted, having tremendous growth. And I want to tell you about it because this is a way to get uncompromised security in your digital life. Bunker is a private messenger together with a password manager, secure vault, and notes that works seamlessly together. So I'm pretty sure in Bunker, pretty sure you're not going to get invited to chats that have war plans. That just doesn't happen in Bunker. No one's going to ask you to help them bomb the Houthis. No one's going to accidentally compromise your security, because Bunker has many layers of security. So first off, private messaging and sharing. You can send messages, leverage Bunker's sharing capacities for passwords, documents, notes, photos, and videos. It's a great place to put all of those things that are in your head that your family might need to know if something were to happen to you. You can safeguard your online accounts for finance, banking, travel, shopping, and more. Plus, you can create secure notes for to-do lists, travel, business, private reflections, even recipes, workout. You know, most of us have that in different places, like some recipes in your bookmark, some notes on your phone, some passwords in a password manager. But how great is it to just have it all in one place? So right now, you can visit Bunker, B-U-N-K-R, .life today. And if you use our code redacted, you get 25% off the plan that you choose. So once again, that's BUNKR.life. Over 130 countries use Bunker, and consumers enjoy peace of mind, travel with greater ease, and have more focus on what matters. So download it from the App Store, the Play Store, or visit BUNKR.life. Recall using the code redacted and you'll get 25% off. That's Bunker.life. Nicole Shanahan, the former running mate of RFK Jr., recently caused major controversy on X when she went viral for this post about chemtrails. Watch.
I was taking the weekend off the internet. I've been surfing this morning and was watching the planes flying overhead, and then I couldn't take it anymore. But that is not a contrail. That looked like it started as a contrail, maybe, and now it's turning into a cloud. See how thick that is? You can see this one. It's a little further behind. And this one's a little bit further behind as well. This one is the one that's been up there longest. This shit has to end. This is ridiculous. It's like an otherwise perfect day.
Well, I had a chance to sit down with her recently to ask her about what the government can do about chemtrails, what we know about it versus what the media tries to pretend we don't know, and other MAHA priorities such as fluoride, chemicals in our food, and also why is HHS focused on anti-Semitism? It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you do too. Watch. Nicole Shanahan, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for offering your time. I want to start by asking you about chemtrails, because you lit the internet on fire when you started to talk about this, and many mainstream media outlets are just declaring out of pocket, that's a conspiracy theory, nothing to see here. Well, we've seen that before with, the JFK investigation, COVID, vaccines, things like that. So what do you think? Let's talk about the media later, but let's start with, what do you think Health and Human Services can actually do about this? What are the answers that we're seeking?
Yeah, thanks for the question. It appears that the Overton window has been blown wide open on the issue of geoengineering, atmospheric weather modification. And, you know, the term chemtrails comes fairly loaded because there's an assumption when you use the term chemtrails that there's something harmful happening as a result. And that's why it's become the colloquial go-to term. And in fact, those who have been watching this and have dedicated their lives to tracking geoengineering, they are comfortable using the term chemtrail now because they have identified particles, materials, inputs that are being used for geoengineering and weather modification through aerosol injection that actually are harmful to human health and our ecosystem health as well. So natural systems such as soil, water, and air are being impacted negatively. And I do know that HHS is in the process of putting together a team to investigate this. Much is unknown. Some is known. We do know that cloud seeding does exist. We do know that counties throughout the United States have active contracts with private companies to cloud seed and thus bring greater moisture to arid lands. And this is all done under the umbrella of climate change mitigation. And so what we don't know and what HHS wants to figure out is the full spectrum of these activities and whether there is a fundamental missing regulatory body looking into harmful impacts of these practices.
What strikes me as I was just reading my local city council newsletter and they're trying to get feedback on a new overpass. And so they have to get public consent for a park and an overpass. Why no public consent for modifying the weather, even if they have benevolent intentions?
Yeah, so there's a few layers to this. So there's the state regulatory layer, and then there's the federal, and then there's this whole category of federal airspace projects that are protected as confidential. And I think that's where we need to be spending efforts at the executive level, is really investigating what the federal government is doing without these disclosures. So, at the state level, you know, there's this misconception that if you ban geoengineering at the state level, you protect all the skies above that state from these practices. That's false. Even if you ban geoengineering at the state level, such as what Tennessee has done, the federal government can still operate these projects overhead. There is no referendum process or even required disclosure process, and that is wrong. That is not okay. And while this hasn't been fully or thoroughly examined legally, there's no lawsuits yet, but there should be. So states that have banned these practices have every right to sue the federal government for these practices. We just haven't had a state level attorney general yet bring one of these cases forward. And if you are an AG of one of these states, I highly recommend that we push for one of these lawsuits, because I don't know how else we're going to get these disclosures.
Oh, that's fascinating. What a fascinating idea. Now, the media line, again, is geoengineering is real, but chemtrails are not. That defies logic. They say out of pocket, we know that there's no harmful effects, when we knew from Operation Popeye in Vietnam that it was lead iodide. How do we know? We lack the information. So what is your take on the utter lack of curiosity of the corporate media and their out of turn announcement that this is fine, nothing to see here?
I think it reminds all of us of the statement around the mRNA vaccines being safe and effective. Don't look under the hood. Don't listen to these conspiratorial voices. And in fact, there is quite a bit of active censorship or media manipulation that really deters individuals from furthering their inquiries and curiosity as to what's actually at play. And, you know, I think that that playbook of really using these derogatory attacks on qualified inquiries to shut them up, I mean, that reminds us all of what it felt like during those COVID lockdowns. And so there's a lot of parallels to be drawn between the COVID-19 era and what's happening today, which is this Overton window being blown wide open on the issue of geoengineering, people coming forward with evidence that is raising concern, real red flags about the contents of what is being used for weather modification, the lack of regulatory oversight, the lack of disclosure to the public, the lack of public consent. And here we are, here we are at what I think is the beginning of this global conversation around geoengineering, and fact finding, and, going up against, we don't really know what right now is this, you know. I do know the Gates Foundation is involved in geoengineering. I do know Open Philanthropy is involved in geoengineering. I know that the World Economic Forum has pushed it, and several universities are pushing for it. And sure, that's fine. But we also deserve, as the people, a full disclosure process and referendum opportunity to opine.
Right. And so they call us all crazy for coming up with theories because we get no real data. I'm sure, have you seen the old clip of Prince even talking about how kids fight more when they play outside because of chemtrails, like years ago, right? These are valid questions. Mm-hmm. Now, NOAA, the National Oceanic Association, is saying, well, we just don't have that technology. And, you know, if you're really taking it so far as redirecting hurricanes and things like that, then you really have just gone too crazy. My problem with that is I have seen NOAA capable of some really unacceptable politics in the last several years, for instance, refusing to acknowledge that wind farms kill whales, you know, their sort of take on the oceanic warming when they know that natural cycles warm the ocean. So I get nervous when I see a government agency ringing in about this, even though we have a new administration. So can we trust NOAA, or do you think we're better off under HHS because you have this personal faith in RFK Jr.?
So interestingly, there is a disclosure requirement if a geoengineering company is going to be modifying the weather. They're actually required by law to notify NOAA of that so that NOAA can update its weather forecasts. So the fact that they're saying such, you know, contradictory things like, well, you know, don't, you know, there's things that can be done, but there's, but you guys are adding too much hyperbole to this, too much sensationalism. Yeah. Like, you don't, you know, waste your time discussing the sensationalism of weather modification. You know, go on with your day. There's nothing to be concerned with here.
Right.
Well, they don't actually have enough knowledge to understand the totality of what these projects do to our ecosystem and atmospheric processes. And, you know, for them to just brush this off as no big deal, when in fact we know that, you know, the laws of thermodynamics and the unpredictability of our atmosphere can lead to serious consequences. And there have been scientists that have been blowing the whistle on this, raising concerns about the fact that when you meddle with atmospheric systems, there are unintended consequences that we don't fully understand how to model yet and predict. And given the fact that not all of these are disclosed and looked at under, you know, one system model is problematic as well. So I think, you know, in total, NOAA really ought to be empowering dissenting voices. And again, this is what happened during COVID-19. We censored dissenting voices that were qualified, including the voice of Jay Bhattacharya, who is now head of NIH, an epidemiologist from Stanford University, who was silenced because he looked at the data and said, you know, lockdowns are not being handled properly. There's a better way to do this. And he was, you know, silenced. And so there's many people today in the context of geoengineering and weather modification that are also being silenced. These are very important voices, and NOAA ought to be listening to them. I do know that HHS will be listening to them.
Okay. But that's one government agency. So we could possibly have dueling government agencies with dueling agendas, which, you know, it's bad for all of us when we have no consent inside an administration. One thing I wanted to ask you, if we pivot away a little bit from chemtrails, is the wish list of Maha Moms, because I think the both of us are in that group definitively. And one of the things that RFK Jr. had promised that on day one of the Trump administration, that fluoride would be ordered to be removed. And we have not seen much inklings, many conversations about that yet since Secretary Kennedy has taken office. What do you think in terms, where do you think that lies? This is just, I'm asking because it gives me a lot of anxiety. It's one of my top wish lists. And so maybe I'm asking for selfish reasons. But among the things that we obviously want is vaccine safety, preservatives and chemicals that are harmful removed from the food chain, and fluoride. Do you think that these are just in a wish list that we'll get to? What's your take on that?
I am learning. I'm not within the administration, but I am very close to it. And, you know, I view my role as reporting on it and trying to, you know, understand really what the hurdles are, where the hurdles lie. I mean, for instance, the CDC is refusing to give access to HHS to very important databases. And those databases do contain information about, you know, for instance, what are in some of these lot numbers that were injected into American citizens, because we know that there was inconsistency in the vaccine manufacturing process of the mRNA vaccines. And, you know, we would like to know which lot numbers were compromised. So this is something that I feel like the public deserves access to. This is really important information for individuals to be able to investigate what is going on with their own health. And there's roadblocks. And so there's these various layers of bureaucracy that prevent these very common sense agenda items to get through. And, you know, fluoride, a very important study just came out that showed conclusively that a certain amount of exposure to fluoride in the water causes neurodevelopmental issues, decreased IQ. And it's a very good study. It's a solid study. But why can't that study affect immediate change? Also, why can't the studies on the problems with the mRNA vaccine affect enough change for the FDA to withdraw its approval? Well, there's a lot of legacy roadblocks in the federal government right now within these agencies, and it is going to take a massive effort to unlock those roadblocks. There's individuals within these agencies that are actively trying to undermine these efforts. And it's, you know, this is a
who
big
are they?
Challenge.
Can I curse them? What do I need to do? Like, what do us moms need to do? Right. Because this is, again, something that's very important to us is removing any kind of toxins from the lives of our babies. Like what needs to happen? And I guess, you know, when the Trump administration took office, there were a lot of us like, all right, we're doing this now. These were the promises. And I'm an adult. I realize that when you get a new job, it's not the way you dreamed it would be and that there are roadblocks in place. But I really appreciate your take on what those roadblocks are. And do you think that there is, maybe can you give me I don't want to get you in trouble, but I want to ask this in a nice way. what are the conflicting interests that would keep those things from happening? Who are they besides the Gates Foundation and things like that?
Well, fluoride's an interesting one because you have like the American Dental Association claiming that fluoride prevents cavities, and they present data that I think I'm going to misquote this stat, but the fluoride in the water is presenting over 20% of cavities from occurring. And you know, tooth decay is a real problem. It costs the government, or it costs the country, billions of dollars. And it's saving families money. But when you line it up to the, you know, cost, or you know, the cost benefit analysis of lower IQs and potential neurological damage, it doesn't make sense. So there's this common sense issue within our nation, generally speaking, where there are groups that want to keep the fluoride in the water. And actively trying to you know, fight the MAHA agenda, calling them. Remember, fluoride 20 years ago was being called out as an issue in the water, and those individuals were framed as conspiracy theorists. If you remember the movie with Mel Gibson, I think it was actually called Conspiracy Theorists. You know, fluoride is a theme in this film, and. And so this has been a multi-decade battle, and here we are now on the front lines, close to getting it done, and we still hear these same, embedded interests, and it doesn't really make sense, I mean, to anybody besides, you know, it truly does the dental... industry, are they all fighting for this? I mean, certainly my dentist isn't fighting to keep fluoride in the water.
No,
there's other ways to get it. So it just doesn't make sense where this policy and where this like battle is coming from to keep it in the water.
Right. And how much of it is just ego because the government fought against this science for so long? Book on this is The Fluoride Deception by Christopher Bryson. And they talk about how many scientists knew this since, and the connection of the Manhattan Project is fascinating. How many lives were ruined just for bringing this inconvenient data into the American Dental Association. So, that's just one of many. And then what is your sense about the food industry? Is there a fight back for the chemicals and the dyes that we know are harmful for our children? Does Secretary Kennedy and HHS, do you think, and I know I'm not asking you to speak as an insider, I just want to make that clear, do you think that they are also in an uphill battle in that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that glyphosate is our biggest enemy as it when it comes to food. Glyphosate, much like fluoride, is proven to cause, and tons of evidence, you know, billions of dollars Bayer and Monsanto have had to pay out in glyphosate damages because it is connected to a very specific form of cancer. But yet, the battle that's being fought right now is state by state. Bayer is trying to get through a bill that states that if the EPA says glyphosate is safe, then we shouldn't have to pay damages out. And so they're looking for that same 1986 vaccine immunity, but for glyphosate. And so to me, glyphosate has to be a number one priority of this administration. There's been a lot of attention put on preservatives in food and red dye. But here's the thing. We can choose as MAHA moms to not feed our children those foods, but glyphosate enters our water systems. Glyphosate sprayed on one field can go onto the crops of another field that are organic. I mean, glyphosate comes into our food systems in ways that are very, very hard to prevent, even if you're actively trying to avoid glyphosate poisoning. It impacts our farmers as well. And it's just, it's a really ghastly injury. And you know, Red Dye 40 and you know, sodas and things, I think those are, in my opinion, secondary priorities, but they're almost easier to go after because we understand the mechanisms by which to do so, such as with SNAP, regulating the use of SNAP for purchasing of soda. I mean, there's something very reasonable about that and easy to do and enact. But glyphosate management is actually a much harder battle because you have so many entrenched systems in place. So it, you know, banning it is very, very challenging, and the EPA is somehow still protecting its use.
That's wild. Well, I really appreciate your explanation of the brick walls in front of HHS and the priorities of Maha Moms, because I don't want to be impatient, obviously. I want to continue to have faith in the things that garnered my vote as a Maha Mom, but you can see it gets frustrating, right, to watch the politics play out. So it's wonderful to have someone like you who can continue to speak about what's harming us and our families.
Look, I am frustrated too. I wish that, you know, the majority of Trump's executive orders have been around the MAHA agenda. There are powers that he has under executive authority to move these issues through
barriers.
Faster. And I think that the onus is really on Bobby, HHS, and our movement to push Trump towards those decisions.
So what do you think?
You know, keep speaking up. He listens. He hears us, you know, every opportunity there is to catch the ear of him and Susie Wiles, do so. You know, tweet at Susie Wiles, tweet at cabinet members, you know, tweet at Brooke Rollins at the USDA. They see and hear all these things. Like, tweet at Stephen Miller. He has a huge amount of authority in the administration. So don't give up. We're close. We just got a new head of the FDA today. We just got a new head of NIH today. And all of these cabinet positions are critical to getting things done, because it's not just, you know, Bobby alone can't do it. It has to be the other members of the cabinet as well. And then getting through to their entire agencies. I mean, these are agencies full of individuals, and they are looking at and reading what we are putting out there on social media. So, you know, this is something we cannot lose faith. We have to keep pushing. A lot can get done in the next 4 years.
Now, one more question. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask. Because of this long wish list and maybe impatience that moms tend to have, when I see HHS focused on, for instance, Colombian anti-Semitism and protests, the list of things that Secretary Kennedy put out last week included that he wanted to investigate why Jewish enrollment is down at universities and review Middle Eastern studies inside these universities. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? Like, what's that? What's that about? And so that kind of contributes. I think that makes me further impatient, because I had these list of things that I know are true, such as fluoride and glyphosate and things like that. And then I see this focus, and I know that I'm not alone in this kind of questioning of what is this? And I know that you don't speak for him, and I know you're not speaking for HHS, but what is your response to that? What is your response to my response, I suppose?
Yeah, it's my initial response to that tweet was very similar to yours and others. It was like, what is this about?
Yeah.
And you know, is this a function of Health and Human Services? I could see the argument under Human Services to attempt to combat radicalization and racism and disturbances on our campus, which is very real. Like, the universities have been infiltrated by anti-Western ideology, anti-American ideology. Oftentimes it does get tied into anti-Semitism, which, you know, has been for reasons
sure
that, you know, require a great deal of analysis, but And is not the topic of our interview today, but there is something there to be said. It is a big issue. We are stuck, especially as Christians, between various other ideologies that are really vying for America's attention and America's prioritization. And I think many of us just want to be done with that battle and just focus on America and American values and our families. And we want to just be like, okay, can you guys just stop arguing over there in the Middle East? And can we just focus on our own country right now? And I am in that camp. I am very much in that let's put America first and American families first. And can we just please, you know, move past this and keep all of those other outside ideologies outside of our universities and outside of our priorities of our government agencies. And I want to get there and I want to chart how to get there. I have some ideas, but again, I'm not within the administration. I am out here as a Maha mom. But it's happening and we can't avoid it. It has permeated every aspect of our lives here in America. The fact that there is this battle being waged more broadly, and these are very big, old biblical ideologies that are being waged right now on our soil.
Yeah. Okay. So I think my takeaway from that is we keep the fight. Let's keep our focus on where we have our priorities. And, you know, we can make a difference in our Maha goals. And if we collectively are like, what's that about? We wanted this, then maybe we get our focus on this. So thank you very much for responding to that question. You can follow Nicole Shanahan on X, and she has plenty to say. She has her own platform, a large platform, where she, again, highlights these priorities that are important to all of us. So thank you again for your time. I really appreciate meeting you, and I hope we get to speak again.
Likewise, it was a real pleasure to be on Redacted. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's going to do it for Redacted. Let me know what you think of that interview. I was really excited to speak to Nicole Shanahan. I think she's been one of the bravest voices in American politics in recent years, and I really appreciate what she has to say. And I think she's a great advocate for people who want common sense legislation, especially health reform. So let me know what you think. Hey, you can visit our store if you'd like to signal to the world that you like Redacted. Go to redactedstore.com, see what we've got there. For instance, our t-shirts. Let's see, communism equals starvation, non-pacifist peace extremists. Those are some of my favorites. So let me know what you like there. And yeah, just check it out. Redactedstore.com. You can get mugs and stickers and things like that. So please do like and subscribe. Share this video. We really appreciate it. Hopefully, the entire Morris team will be back on set maybe tomorrow if Clayton feels better. So I apologize I had to go it alone. I apologize I was out yesterday. This is the last kick in the pants, I think, of the flu season. So it happens when you have three kids. Thank you again. Hope you have a great day. See you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks for watching Redacted.